board for Monday, September 9th. Go on, we have a roll call.
Supervisor Friend?
Here.
Supervisor McPherson? Councilmember Matthews?
Here.
Councilmember Terrazas? Mm-hmm. Councilmember Reed? Councilmember Terman?
Here.
Citizen English? Citizen Dexter?
Here.
Citizen Gert?
Here.
Very good. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Oral communications. Any oral communications on items that are not on the seating's agenda? Please step forward, Marilyn.
Do I have to step forward?
You can sit forward. All well and good.
How long?
3 minutes, please.
Okay. I'm here again about something that is endangering everyone in the library. And facts don't cease to exist because they're ignored. But the consequences of ignoring health hazards are profound. And I'm speaking about the wireless microwave radiation that is in this library and so many places. And let's remember how popular smoking was everywhere, spraying DDT years ago. And I want to encourage people to pick up the Connection magazine, the most recent one, looks like this. War is not healthy for children and other living things, it says, nor is wireless GMOs or vaccines. There's a huge centerfold section on the facts and the references of the endangerment that this technology poses. And on the back, would you allow your child to be sprayed with DDT, which is what they used to do? I was in a lawsuit to ban DDT in 1969 when all our mother's milk had DDT in it because all these things get in the environment. Then it says, don't spray your child with wireless radiation, and points out that the World Health Organization categorizes this type of microwave radiation from cell phones, Wi-Fi, cell towers, as a 2B carcinogen. Same category as DDT and lead and benzene. So I encourage you to pick this up and do the right thing, and I want to give you a copy of what I distributed to the library at the Board of Supervisors meeting when the library facilities plan was on the agenda to add this into your considerations of removing this harm. And it points out that the National Library in Paris, the equivalent of our Library of Congress, exchanged microwave radiation for wired connections. They based their decisions on scientific medical research documenting harm from electropollution. And this library consists of 1.5 million holdings located in 4 tower buildings of staff of 2,500 employees and a budget of $254 million. If they can remove this harm, and librarians and everybody should be studying the evidence, then you can do it here. So I'll leave you with a copy.
Thank you. If you give it to staff, Marilyn, any of the directors who would like to review that?
Yeah. And I would stay for the meeting, but it feels terrible with all these wireless microwave devices.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the board on items not on the CD's agenda? If not, we'll move on to presentations, programming division, Janice McDriscoll and staff.
Usually when I address you, I'm talking about some special wonderful thing like Libraries Inside Out or a community read. But tonight, what I'd like to do is give you an idea of what the foundation of the Programs and Partnerships Division is. The daily, weekly, monthly things that happen that the programming team puts together and carries out. These are the things that our community relates to on a regular basis, and this is the foundation of how we reach out to the community. So the first thing I'd like to do is have you know who these folks are. So I'm going to introduce the program team to you. Eugenia Grady, right here, who is this year's team leader. Team leader rotates annually, and this is Jeannie's lucky year. Brenda McElroy, and Carrie Gunn, Danny Imperio, Laura Whaley, and Paula Turpin. And I'm going to come back to Paula. They are the consistent staff that works with community. And I want to come back to Paula because she's our hub. She's one of the most important people on the team because everything comes through her. She does triage every second of the day. When you see our programming phone number, our programming email, they all go to Paula. So 1 second, she can be taking a request for a class visit, and the next minute scheduling a tails-to-tail program, and then the next minute she can be talking to a senior about a computer class. And she knows where everybody is, even if we don't know where we are. And she kind of keeps us on the straight and narrow. So I really wanted to call attention to her because without her, the rest of us would be just floating out there. And floating is really it. These guys never stay in one place. They're traveling a lot. And we want to give you a sense of what that's like. So I'm going to start with Laura Whaley, who's going to talk a little bit about the people we work with. Laura?
Hi, I'm Laura Whaley. I am the shepherd for the downtown and Garfield Park branches, as well as the Tills to Tills program. And I currently have become the chef liaison for our team council. So I'm going to talk about who we partner with. And this is the big stuff. And we partner with folks that sometimes we meet with them because we have a once a year event. Then we have those partners that might be once a month. And then we have those partners that are weekly or even sometimes daily. And each of us, as we shepherd programs, we're in these communications with all of those. Paula is also talking to these folks all the time. So, as Janice mentioned, most of you know about our big community-wide once a year events. And there's a big read, and forgive me for reading off the list, but it is actually quite a long one. We partner with Santa Cruz Rights, Museum of Art and History, Santa Cruz City Schools, the Santa Cruz County Office of Education, the Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, the National Endowment for the Arts, Bookshop Santa Cruz, Community Printers, Community Television of Santa Cruz County, Board Music, News Cannon Theater, Martha Heasley Fox Center for Steinbeck Studies, the National Steinbeck Center, the Nickelodeon Theater, Studio Holiday, and the Millen Suspension Armchair Theater. For Libraries Inside Out, which is that wonderful program where we have the artwork outside of the downtown ranch and it's now being run in many of our smaller libraries, we partner with the Santa Cruz City Arts Commission, Cato Graphics, Lutheran Express, Mariah Roberts, Bridget Henry, and Crystal Burns. And for California Reads, this is our upcoming program for fall of 2017. don't want to ignore our internal partnerships, which we have, and our biggest partnership is with the volunteer office, which Denise is our head now, and her two interns from AmeriCorps. We go to them, we ask for help, they go out and they have never let us down yet, so I hope that holds true. We also have our partnership with the branch staff, because there's no way we can do what we do without them. And our LIT staff for getting everything together, and then our marketing team so that we can get what we do out to the public. And these are all partnerships that take the communication, the follow-up, and really effort on both sides to make happen. And nothing that we do could go without our partnerships. So I am going to pass it now to Brenda, who's going to give a little bit more finer details.
Hi, so I'm with Scotts Valley Branch and Cantala. I'm the shepherd for those two branches. And as Laura detailed, sort of all the communication is very important. Whenever we go out to different branches, we want to pick up details from them about what the patients have been saying, about what they appreciate about the programs, and further ideas for other programs. Because there's a long list of programs that everybody would love us to do, but of course we can't manage all of them. So the main thing that we do every week is the continual outreach to the families. So it's families with small children and the education side of things. We mainly do our weekly programs are for early literacy and school-aged children. We have both a family place now and our regular story times that we have 11 that run in a week. Is it 12? 11 or 12 once a week. We will do at least two. And after school programs as well for school children. And then in the middle of the day, there's always space for class visits. So we do all of those. And we use a lot of volunteers, from Diane, because from Denise. We wouldn't manage without our volunteers. They help us actually put out the equipment at all the tables. All of our sites are multi-purpose rooms. So we send everything up every week for all the groups that we do. And they help us put out craft materials and put other things together. And then after the program, when we're helping the visitors, the parents, and the children find suitable books, our volunteers are helping us tidy everything up in a tiny amount too. There's always a lot of cleanup to do when you have 30-odd kids in the room enjoying themselves. So our volunteers are all that part of us. As Jenny said, Paul always knows where we are or where we're supposed to be, and it gets really complicated sometimes. We do travel around. We've never had to turn a class visit down. We've always managed to meet all the requests on that. And so we sometimes spend many hours in the car. We all listen to a lot of stories, but we can spend up to 3 hours in the car, which wouldn't surprise you this evening. So that can make a lengthy day. We also keep up with professional development. The new things on the horizon have been the STEM recently for schools and now the core curriculum. So we're trying to keep up with all of that and making sure that we're applying our collection to these new needs that the parents are coming in with. And for just the four perfect books for each story time, we read over a dozen to get those four that are just right for the group. We continually assess what we do. There's always a list of what we can, of what the community would like us to do. But obviously a limit to what we can actually achieve. We also apply for grants and we're shepherds for those. So although we have a host of partners already, we are always seeking to increase these, especially to serve the underserved in our community. And that leads us on to outreach, where Jeannie will now tell you a bit more about the outreach side.
I'm going to come over here because I don't want my thanks to all of you. Before I talk about outreach, well, let's start with outreach. If you haven't already received one of these programs flyers about next Wednesday. There's a very special guest who was brought to our attention by a former member of the Joint Powers Board, and she's going to be talking and helping us discuss the G-Spin quilts at Scotts Valley. And so then, we've got all these literacy programs and all the regular programming that we do. Brenda spoke briefly about class visits, but we don't just do class visits in the libraries. We sometimes go out to the schools, particularly preschools, but often other schools as well. And our, one of our partners for the preschool class visits is Raise and Reader. I forgot my props. So when you're in the branch and you see kids carrying these blue bags, that means that they've gone through the Raising a Reader program and come into the library and gotten their library card and had a library orientation and, you know, some stories and songs. And most of those class visits bring parents with them. And some of those parents have never come to a library before. This is their first opportunity to have, so we're not only reaching out to the kids, but to the parents and the families as well. We have many classes, several classes that have regularly scheduled visits at Live Oak, all three first grades from Del Mar School, plus the Del Mar School special needs class come on a regular rotating basis. The third graders, right, from Holy Cross come once a month downtown, and then many other classes from schools all over the county request visits when they have a special project. We process a whole bunch of library cards. We do that for class visits because many times when the classes come, the kids don't have library cards, and that's one of the purposes for bringing them to the library. But we also do big pushes in the fall with Mission Hill Middle School, Harbor High School, San Lorenzo Valley High School, and Aptos High School. And we actually go out to Mission Hill and Harbor and spend a couple days at each school processing library cards on the spot. Then the staff, the library staff, and the teaching staff at San Lorenzo Valley and Aptos High collect all that information and send us packets. I got a grocery bag full the other day from Aptos High. And that's just, we did all of their students last year, and now this year we're doing the just the incoming ninth graders and any students who are new. But so we're very grateful to the branch staff, at particularly the smaller branches, because they help us out by processing thousands of library cards since we started this, and over 1,000 every year. As Laura mentioned, our newest outreach partnership is with Palo Alto Medical Foundation for Reach Out and Read, and that's a national program where pediatricians talk about literacy with families at all the well-child visits from 3 months to 5 years, and each they give the child a book every time they come for a well-child visit. Now, what we're doing is we have a special library card application, and when the parents bring in the library card application filled out, not only will the kid get their first library card, but they'll get this book, which is bilingual, Libro book, and this is the logo that they made up, shows all the partners for Reach Out and Read. Our outreach isn't limited to kids. We go, it extends to seniors at 4 monthly library hours at senior residences, and we take a selection of books for them to browse, and also usually at least a crate of books that they requested, and other materials that they requested at the previous time. And we also have a book buddy program of home delivery of library materials to anyone who's homebound. We're in the process, thanks to Denise and her new AmeriCorps volunteers, of transitioning Book Buddies to a totally volunteer program. We also visit the jail once a month, and thanks to the friends, we have a good supply of paperback books to give to them that they can keep. But it's not about just giving them books, crates of books, you know, dropping them off. All the inmates really, really look forward to the opportunity to discuss, to browse, and then to discuss their favorite books and authors with us. And they by where two or three people ask for specific titles. Unfortunately, we can't honor those requests, but we do look for them. And if they come in the donations, then we grab them. We go to Hope Services here in Aptos once a month, and that's a program for developmentally delayed and physically handicapped adults. They have a theme every month, and we do stories and songs and sometimes even videos that go along with their theme. And then there's summer reading, which takes a huge, I mean, we'll probably start planning in the next month for next year's summer reading. But we use the theme and some activities. They're provided by the State Library. This year's theme, you probably already remember, it was Reading is So Delicious. And it was great. We had more kids sign up and more people of all ages attend our events than ever before. Over 200 programs for all ages throughout the summer. And quite remarkably, 52% of the almost 3,000 kids who signed up for summer reading actually signed out. And that means they brought their booklets back and got their summer reading dollars. And the average number of summer reading dollars collected was 17.6. That means they read almost 18 hours per kid during that 7-week period. And we only offer them 20. That's the max they can get. So they did a terrific job, and we're very, very proud of those results. We also had the fifth annual Battle of Bands, and about over 400 people came and listened to bands that afternoon, and it was quite a success. And then this festival of the book, celebrating the end of summer reading, over 700 people came. There were crafts, dress up, entertainment, face painting, and great food, barbecue by Teresa and her Rotary buddies from Scotts Valley. But some people end, I mean, officially it ended, but it really didn't. We had two big events after that in August. Sandy was locked in at the Scotts Valley Library for the second year with teens. And she's just smiling, look at her. And Brenda and I took seven kids from Jardines del Valle, which is one of the bookmobile stops that we've been going to as long as we've had the bookmobile, on a shopping trip up to Santa Cruz. One of the prizes that everybody who signs out gets is a coupon for pizza at Roundtable. So we shopped, we ate pizza lunch at Roundtable Pizza, and Brenda and I were exhausted at the end of the day, but the kids were going strong. And now, I invite you to watch a short video about summer reading.
Thank you.
I have a summary of our summer reading statistics so that you can actually get all the numbers. And, but I went back and looked at all the monthly reports from 2012-13, and I was exhausted after I read these numbers. But during that fiscal year, we did 1,728 programs, and the total number of attendees was 36,986.
I feel like you sort of started just saying, what don't you do? And that was an amazing video. Thank you for sharing that. Our family went to Festival of the Book, and Harvey West Park was packed. It was just a lot of fun. So thank you for everything you do throughout the year. These are really amazing events, and if you weren't there, it was a really special day for all the families that were out at the park that day.
And this is our first time we used our new screen and computer setup.
All right. Are there any questions from the board members regarding the programs? No? Thank you. So we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Before we do that, also recognize that I came in late. Also, Supervisor McPherson and Jim Reed, just for the record, were present as well. So the next item on the agenda is staff recognition. Teresa?
You've got the report here, and actually the programming team, who are now trying to run out of the room.
We've got 3 hours.
Run out of the room. They're made here. Laura and Sandy and Brenda and Carrie and Paula, and then a couple of that Janice mentioned were not here. Jasmine, we're all nominated in the city.
Come back here.
I nominated both of them for things that they did to help me out. I won't repeat Helga's, but had to do a festival of the book, though. And I don't think, am I missing anyone else? I don't think anyone else on the list is here. Oh, I'm sorry! Sorry, Lois. Lois, thank you, Lois.
We have 50 nominated. I was.
We want to thank the friends for the gift certificates that we get when we're nominated.
Oh, Tinka was nominated.
Tinka.
Yeah, group. Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry.
All of my other answers. Yeah, but, you know.
Thank you.
And because we get a choice of, I think it's 4 different places that we can get a gift certificate for. And I chose Penny Ice Cream.
Thank you to everyone.
Yes.
Thanks for everyone. It's a really lengthy list, and we appreciate all the work you do. So let's move on to the next item on the agenda, member reports. Any reports from members? I know that Dick is not here from the Subfinance Committee. So
we'll have that later.
Okay. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. We'll take this as a single motion for all the items on the consent agenda, unless one of the board members would like to pull that from the agenda for discussion.
I'll move the consent.
Sorry.
Is
there anyone who would like to speak to any item on the consent agenda?
Thank you. I just want to speak on 7F. There's a couple of policies there. One is for board members and one is for members of the public. There's some red text that I saw in the middle of the one about board members, and I got the impression from reading that it said the board welcomes comment during oral communications or during other business. And I'm not speaking right now during either of those two times. So when I read that, I kind of felt like, what is that saying? Is that saying the board is not welcome me speaking at this time? Or maybe it even meant that the board wouldn't let me speak. So I was confused by that, and I don't think that is conforms with the Brown Act. And then on the second one was about public decorum. There's a lot of words there, and I think that it could be said much more briefly. There's words in there like impertinent and boisterous and indecorous. So, impertinent, I understand, if that means you have to stick to the topic, I completely agree. But it could mean insolent or impudent or something like that, and I think it starts to go a little bit off track. Boisterous, I also don't understand that. It's in a phrase where it says, becoming boisterous or otherwise disruptive or something like that. Now, I understand disruptive, so I don't understand what boisterous means. And then there's also several things throughout there that talk about personal statements or personalities or attacking a personality. And I think there has to be freedom to be able to say someone's not doing a good job. And that may seem personal, but I think you have to allow it. When I read over all those things, it seemed to me like there's an attempt by somebody, whoever wrote that, to cast such a wide net that you'd always have a justification for tossing somebody out of the room. And really, when I began reading it, I thought about the financial workshop in April, and Supervisor Friend mentioned Councilmember Terman's shirt apparently had a marijuana leaf motif. And I thought, well, you know, that's personal, and that's
totally boisterous.
And that's
and impertinent.
It's impertinent. It's at least two strikes. And I don't know about slanderous. You know, maybe there's some implication about the Capitola council member. So I just feel like it casts such a wide net. I don't really like that, the way that policy is written.
Thanks. Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to any item on the consent agenda? I'll just bring it back and say that we can look at those provisions. I think that when this was first drafted, one, we welcome comment. We appreciate people speaking at each of these items. And no, this wasn't written to try and prevent a shirt being worn with marijuana leaves the next time. It wasn't we weren't trying to kind of single anyone out on our board. It was really just meant to promote free speech and discussion at the meetings for people to speak on topic. And I think the board chair, whether me or whoever, comes in the future, will use their discretion in determining when any of those policies are violated. I'd like to, if there's any comments on this item or any others, seeing that there's no other speakers.
Can I just add one more thing?
We've already concluded with the oral with the response, but if there's any comments people have on this item,
I have a brief comment, not about my colleague's shirt tonight, although. and to his defense, it wasn't a marijuana leaf. It was close to one, but it wasn't one. But there's nothing within the policies and procedures that excludes or precludes the Brown Act, and since that's under the operating guidelines of what this body adheres to, I respect the speaker's comments, but I don't think that it would be necessary to call out every single instance of which somebody could speak. If you're following the Brown Act, it's outlined that way. If you think for elegance it's necessary to modify it, you could say nothing, in any of these policies shall preclude, the Brown Act. But otherwise, I didn't read it to think and considering this policy is something that really hasn't been modified and the body's been operating under for quite some time, it seems reasonable.
David, can I just suggest that a small editorial change, I think, would correct, speak exactly what you're saying, and we can incorporate that and take that part of what's agreed tonight. That part of the regular agenda, take out the other business section, I'm reading that, I'm not sure, was pulled over from something else that is no longer relevant. So either on issues that are part of the regular agenda or as part of oral communications, because those are the best way to speak. And that would, I can amend that if that's, make that part of the.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Councilmember Turner, second by Councilmember Lee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. So the next item on the agenda is item 8, Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Library's report.
Good evening, everyone. Pete Cullen, president of the Friends, and we've got a few things to tell you about tonight.
We participated in Discretion Breweries Love Mondays, where they donate to nonprofits, and we raised a little over $500. And we'd say we packed the house. And in fact, out of 7 menu items, they ran out of 5. So they were not prepared for the onslaught of beer drinking bibliophiles. They didn't run out of beer. But we also hosted our second Wine in the Stacks at the Live Oak Branch. We had a surfing poet there. We had a really great evening. Raised a little over $500 at that event. We sponsored the kids' summer reading program and provided books for the kids' only book sale. Let's see here. Our staff has been working with the Community Foundation, getting training. We just finished a training in measuring the network nonprofit, which is analyzing our social media programs and how those are working. And then they are also now working on a video production class. So they're working hard to be better. This coming Tuesday night, we have a mixer at this branch right here, and I'll pass these around for anyone who would like to see these, and also I'll pass that around for you guys to take a look at, and also there's some information on our college pass information that's around this in each other. And this is really just to acknowledge and thank our business sponsors, and we have a business membership program in place where we're asking for businesses to basically support the Friends and the libraries at a higher donation level than just regular members. And it's a sliding scale, basically goes from 500 to 10,000. We just got a commitment from Daily Properties to become $500 sponsors. I'm in communication right now with Plantronics looking for them to become business sponsors. So, and this, the purpose of this mixer is really just to acknowledge and thank them, but it's also a great networking opportunity, and it also gives, you know, us an opportunity to go out into the community and invite businesses to this event and pitch for business sponsorship, business sponsorship. So lots of good things going on. We also have our fall book sale coming up November 9th and 10th, or I think it's the 9th and 10th or 8th and 9th, but it's Friday, Saturday, November. In early November, and we are going to be inviting other nonprofits to be at that Friday night opening and invite their constituents to that members-only night. And so it's an opportunity to just celebrate all the other nonprofits in the community, let them have a presence at the book sale, and hopefully bring in some more people to the book sale. So lots of good things happening. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, we move on to the staff reports. Other than item D, are there any questions on the other items that are included in the information? Any member of the public would like to speak to any item other than D? Okay, what then, seeing none, let's move directly to the presentation by Gene Brinkman on the facilities master plan.
Hang on, can I
get up here? We're outlawed. I can be here. I can be there. I can be there.
It's technical support.
Let me just, while she's getting the audio visual aid set up, all of you around the room have hard copies of what's going to be on there. We did a survey of 451 people who can be described by their previous voting habits as being likely voters in a November 2014 election. And we also looked at subsets of those. And we'll get to that and go through this overview of people who would be likely to vote in the June election or who went to a special mail-only ballot election.
Gene, just nod at me when you want me to advance.
I will. I'm going to go back around. Interviewing was conducted on the weekend, August 9th to 11th. Margin of error is at most plus or minus 4.6%. Just a couple of things. People, permanent absentees, voters make up 47% of the likely voter universe. 18% of our respondents were interviewed on cell phones, which is a new key subset of people. Scotts Valley, Capitola, Felton, Den Lomond, a number of areas don't have very many people in them, not enough really for significant analysis. We added a few to the Scotts Valley area. We added the 95033. People who live in that zip code to get them up to a number that would be at least something we could look at, and then we combined Feltland and Walden also. Those were 39 and 33 people, respectively. And the last couple little items, 59% are registered as Democrats, 19% as Republicans. The remaining 22% are either independents, don't have a party, or some other minor party. Here's the one that's just wonderful. 75% said that they had visited a local public library in the last year. And 46% had used the library's website in the past year. So now with that in mind, we did that so well. The first chart, and what we're going to do is just give an overview of what many highlights of the survey. The first question we asked in the survey was, how important are local libraries to the quality of life in Santa Cruz County? This is a question we have asked in two other surveys we've done for the libraries, 94, 2007, and now 2013. There isn't much to say except people recognize how important libraries are. 91% say they're either extremely or very important. That's the same as we found 6 years ago. Although the slight difference is extremely important, it's almost not worth mentioning because the numbers are so high and the recognition of how important libraries are is so universal. So we're going to chart two, which actually talks about two different questions in the survey. The first one was, overall, how would you rate the job being done by your local public libraries? 82% rate your libraries doing an excellent or good job. That is an astoundingly high number. I never see numbers that I've been doing this for a long time. And even fire departments don't get that high a number often. So not only do we see that the libraries are important to the quality of life in the community, but you're doing a good job in supporting that quality of life. The second pie chart there was rating the job the district was doing in its management. And here, it's almost as good, 72% positive, excellent, good. And frankly, most of what we lose in excellent, good goes to no opinion. So it's not like there's a lot of people who think that you're not doing a good job in anything. It's just a few more people don't know. They just don't know enough to have an opinion. Chart three. Two separate questions, and these are important in measuring how ready people might be to support some sort of ballot measure for libraries. First is, how much need does the community's public library have for more money in general? And while 77% saying there's either a greater some need is certainly a good number, we would still like to see the great number be higher. If, say, in a year from now, there were an actual campaign going on, I would hope that by election day, maybe 50 or 55% of the voters would feel that there was a great need for more money, particularly if we were asking them for money. People who are more likely to say that there's a great need are the people who support a measure, people who use the libraries and the website, women, renters, a little less support among homeowners, not support, a little lower level of recognition that there's a great need for more money. People in the Scott Valley area, the older people over 65. The second pie chart, which is how much need is there specifically for more money to repair, maintain, modernize local library facilities, which is essentially what we would be asking them to support if something actually does get on the ballot eventually. And here the combination great and some need is almost as high at 75%, although we still see that the great need is not where we want it to be. So we need to, in this case as well, move some of those some need people over to the great need column. What's interesting is that while we have some on the need for more money, Republicans are less likely to say that they need more money. They are not any less likely to say that facilities don't need to be repaired. In chart four, we asked it to some general vote questions. And it was written as you might see something on a ballot, and it was for an $84 million measure. How would you vote on this election we're held today? And this is a obviously a very encouraging beginning. 75% say they would vote yes. Now, we didn't talk about tax rates or any what kind of tax. This is just in general. One of the purposes of this early poll was to give us a sense of where we are, not only attitudinally, as we started to see in the first three charts, but also in this sort of general vote question. The second pie, after a series of questions giving people more information about why there might be a measure on the ballot, how many to be used, reasons to support, reasons to oppose, we asked again, how would you feel this? I mean, same 75%, although the definitely yes did go up from 41 to 48%. So there was some movement, some solidifying of that support in this, what we used to call it. Simulated campaign, which of course it isn't because you're trying to deal with 20 minutes, but it does give you a sense of how well you can do all. Generally speaking, more support among people who use the libraries and the website, Democrats, independents, less likely among the people who don't use the website, who have lived here longer, more than 20 years, Republicans, especially Republican men. And I think just geographically, it's interesting to see where the different geographic areas were on this question. I think the highest is probably the city of Santa Cruz, where 83% on that first vote. The Scotts Valley area was at 72. The Felton Van Lomond area was at 76. The rest of the unincorporated area was 71. And by supervisorial district, 75%, 272%, 381%, and 571%. There weren't many people in District 4 because that area will probably not be part of this measure. Most of that area won't be part of this measure. Chart 5. All right, as I said in the beginning, one of the things we're looking at is there any advantage to one election over another as you go forward? And this is a... in a way, this is a very good result because there is nothing. There is no difference. Among the people, the likely voters in the November 2014 election, it's 75% yes. Likely voters in the June 2014 election, 74% yes. People likely to vote in a mail-only or special election, 76%. Absolutely. And throughout the whole survey, there are no differences among those three groups.
You might just mention briefly the different profiles.
Right. Well, generally, thank you. Generally speaking, you have an older electorate and the lower turnout you go. So, for instance, our likely universe in November of 2014, we would expect to be somewhere in the 60 to 65% of registered voters will turn out based on historical data. In the June election, it'll be closer to 40%. In the mail-only ballot, somewhere in the 25 to 30% range. And with each of those, for instance, the population that's older, over 65, will go up as a proportion. I think that 33% in this survey, if it was looking at the June, it goes up to, I think, about 45%, something like that. And it goes up from there even in the mail-only ballot. So what's particularly interesting about this is that even as the demographics change, the support for the library still hold steady. And that, you know, that kind of goes back to our first question, was how important are libraries to the quality of life in the community? And the just general recognition everywhere that they're important. Chart 6. This is the first of the issue questions we were talking about. And we asked people for each of these 11 items, does each one make your opinion of the libraries much more favorable, somewhat more favorable, or have no effect on your opinion one way or the other, and accomplishments? These numbers are just the much more favorable. Not the somewhat and the much more, just the much more, and they are astoundingly high. So that everything that the library is doing gets a good response, led by the top two items are item I, talking about opening hours for the libraries, have been restored so that every branch is open at least 5 days a week, and there are only two branches open on Sundays, at 67%, much more favorable. And programs for young children, like story time and children's book collections, have increased. 5. These are all confirmation about... Even the the highest ones, 18% government bureaucrats waste money on salaries and pensions. The permanent quarters of the sales tax, shouldn't be asking for money. Very, very low numbers. We typically will get things at least in the mid to upper 20s in most places for the negative arguments. Even in places where we know they're going to be able to succeed with getting some measure passed in a two-thirds environment, as this would be.
When you added the somewhat more likely to oppose, what sort of percent, just ballpark?
I think
it was 15 to 20%
more? Yeah, we're probably in the mid-30s. So mm-hmm. I think on most of those.
Total?
Yeah, total was with yeah. somewhat and much more. And that's, remember, the top box, and why we always focus on that, is because that's what is enough of an influence on people to get them to actually take some sort of action in case, this case is voting yes or no. Some of these actually are amazing. Even like our bottom one, the 8%, why not use public lawyers and not see why you should have to pay for them. There's only another 6% who find that even somewhat effective. It's very encouraging. Some of the items that people think are true just are not. And we've seen this in other communities as well, not just here. Things like, with the internet libraries that are becoming absolute 10%, and that's, we just saw that in Santa Clara too, when we did their library campaign, that they just won the 1% a couple weeks ago. It'd be very nice. And then our last chart is the reasons to favor the measure. Again, each one of these make you much more favorable, some much more likely to favor the measure, some more likely, or have no effect on your opinion one way or the other. And the contrast, obviously, with the negative is quite clear. 61%, 59%, I mean, all of these, even the 49%, there are surveys that we do for people where 49%, which is the lowest score here, would be higher than anything we get in some of those. So, again, very effective, and a lot of them, they go towards schools and education. You know, leading reasons to favor the measure, children, technology, and seniors. We start towards local schools, up IMC, up-to-date computer technology, safe place for kids, seniors on fixed income, rely on them. It's the pattern. The kids are important, the seniors are important, the programs that service all of them are important, and the programs to make sure that we have good facilities are important. The only other really significant things here, women tend to evaluate most of these at a higher level than men, and Republicans tend to evaluate these at a lower level than anybody else. And the only other interesting one is the youngest voters, 18 to 39 year olds, rate IMC about computer technology is more important than people over 39, 40 years old. So that's kind of a general overview on this. What the takeaway, I mean, at this point is we are quite a ways away from any specific ballot measure.
I don't want to get that.
I think that, I mean, obviously the work has to be done for fashioning a very specific measure, and in the work in the communities with the local communities to figure out exactly what has to be done to put together. Work has to be done with what's the best means of getting to where we want to go as far as with tax rates and the like, and what kinds of taxes. But the basic information that we've gotten here is people are supportive regardless of when you want to put this on the ballot. And that's particularly important because if we had come out with one election being a lot better than another, then we might find ourselves locked into that here. Now we can work with the community to see, all right, what else is going to be on the ballot at the same time. How much is that a factor in when we put ours on the ballot? So we have much more flexibility on putting something on here. Just a lot of really good, positive information as you go forward and try to point towards something for next year. And then once you've actually got something very specific to test to make sure that we're on the right track, then we'll just have to do a short, much shorter than this follow-up survey.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board members?
The state is going to be in proposition to this happening to be in November. So, in general, do you think it's better to concentrate our efforts in the June election because it's local?
No. People always give preference to June elections. I mean, to the local elections, rather. Whether it's June or November or any other time. If you're competing with the state, and if anybody's going to choose between a similar state and local measure, they'll choose the local every time. Well, not every time. The vast majority of the time.
Right.
So it's a state that could be considerably hurt by it. Because the money stays here. It's not going to Sacramento. And that's one of the things we even say in our little 75-word paragraph is, with all the money staying local, no money going to Sacramento, just to re-emphasize that, to make sure that everybody understands that if you're going to have to increase your taxes here, there's a reason for it, because you're going to be supporting our local libraries.
Any other questions? Any member of the public who would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, thank you for receiving the report. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very
a pleasure.
So we'll move on to other business, and I'll ask Council Member Termini to report out from the Finance Committee.
Well, we've met, and two things. One of our work products was coming up with a roles and responsibilities, more or less guidelines for the Finance Committee to set us on track and to make sure we know what we're supposed to do and the things we're not supposed to do. We have taken the stellar Finance Committee bylaws from Capitola. Which were hammered out over weeks and months and years. We have moved them around a little bit and changed some of the wording to apply to our committee. Basically, we are advisory only. We would like to add one member to the committee, though. We can have up to four, which is not a quorum. It should be noted that to comply with the Brown Act, we will not have a quorum, but because it does not have a sunset, it still must be a public meeting. It still must be held in accordance with all the other regulations of the Brown Act. So we would want to this board to request to see if someone else would like to sit on the committee with us.
First, we need to approve the guidelines themselves.
There it is.
Any questions? We'll turn over to any member of the public who would like to speak to this item.
Thank you. One of the headings in the guidelines says responsible lights, so there's just a slight supplement. I'm sorry I didn't come to the committee meeting, because I would have said these things then. The only thing I really want to mention is, under the heading operations, there's paragraph 5, and it says the committee may invite other board members to participate in the committee meeting. And my understanding of the Brown Act is that this is almost completely the opposite of the way the Brown Act works.
Not non-committee members, not other board members.
Well, it's
like yourself.
Actually, other board members can attend the Finance Committee meeting because it is an open meeting. There can be.
Well, when I read that, I mean, it said non-committee members. I thought that meant board members that are not on the committee. I mean, if it doesn't mean board members, then I still don't quite understand what it means. Standing committee meetings are public, so anyone can attend. Nobody needs an invitation, so I think invite is the wrong word to use because anybody can come, whether they're a member of the public or a board member. But there's the subtlety is when a board member attends a committee meeting, a board member is not on the committee. If you wind up getting a majority there, a majority of the board, then the members that are not on the committee aren't supposed to participate. So the general rule in the Brown Act is that a majority of the board can't discuss business outside of a board meeting. So if you go to a committee meeting and you get a majority of the board there, there's kind of a problem. And there's a couple of attorney general opinions about this. One of them I know was in response to a question by Assembly Member McPherson, and there's a second one by Quentin Cobb, who was Supervisor McPherson's colleague in the State Senate. I think both attorney general opinions say that if you get a majority of the board at that meeting, that the non-committee members can't participate. They can't ask questions. They can't make statements. They can't sit on a dais. And so, also, there's a League of, California Cities handbook on Brown Act that I would recommend. It's online. You can search for it. And on page 16, it talks about standing committees. And it's a very simple handbook that any layperson can understand if you don't want to read Attorney General's opinions. I'm afraid that the wording in paragraph 5 could lead to a Brown Act violation.
Perhaps we could clean that up, Mr. Chair, by making it specific to non-board, non-committee members.
If that's what you'd like, although I'm not sure that...
A non-board member cannot participate, or a board member cannot participate if it brings us over a quorum. That's been pretty much common.
They're not participating. They can be present, but they can't participate.
Right, but this, the paragraph 5, Steve, is specifically to participating in a committee meeting. So I would take that to mean that if we felt that a citizen being on that committee would enhance the committee's performance, that would leave it open to us. But it should not be a board member.
So,
Ed,
we're non-committee, non-board.
It's clear as far as the direction to clarify that. Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay, motion by Supervisor McPherson.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Termini. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. There was two items on this. The next one was an oral presentation, and I don't know if Teresa, you'd like to just mention. Councilmember Termini referenced it, so.
The fourth member.
Mm-hmm.
When the finance committee was first set up, there were four members and one dropped off because of time commitment, so we've been operating with three, and as you can see, the guidelines allow up to four, and there has been a board member who's expressed interest in being assigned to the finance committee, so we'll bring that to the board tonight if the board approves, and Ms. Martha Dexter would like to be on the finance committee if so approved by the board tonight.
I'll move to approve the addition of the fourth as well as my connection.
Second. Okay. Motion by Supervisor Friend, second by Councilmember Termini. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. So welcome. We'll move on to item 11. Again, these are just informational items, and unless there's any questions, you can throw in your packet for reference. Any questions on the written communications that are included in the board packet?
James,
can
I just go back a second?
9, sure.
B, F, and G. We skipped over those. The annual training report and recommendations.
Okay. My apologies. I thought.
And I don't really.
There's no action required.
Just if there's any questions, any of you have.
They're
both required to be submitted in September of each year, so they are now hereby submitted. On the ILS, I just wanted to let you all know, I think I sent an email announcing what we had selected. We are in contract negotiations. It has passed legal and risk management. The contract has gotten to those two hurdles, so now we're working on the price part. So we'll be bringing that contract to you in October. I'll just let you know we're moving forward. So.
Okay, thank you for that. So back to item 11 regarding the written communication. Seeing there's no questions on those are in your report. Next item is item 12, the board meeting calendar.
So I have a conflict in November. I have to be in Long Beach for a conference, and I asked you all to check your calendars and some possible dates. What I've heard back is that November 7th and October 28th work for one member. One member suggested we not have a November meeting.
I like that.
You could second the motion.
So, I mean, I am prepared. Major item that I would be the procedures for replacing Nancy Gert, whose term is up in January, but I can have those materials ready for the October meeting so we can get those underway. I don't anticipate, assuming we get the contract for the ILS by October, I don't know of any major items that will be coming up in November. So, if you did want to cancel it.
Perhaps we can hold this till a decision in our October meeting.
Do you want to back up date in November in case you do want a meeting?
Actually, if you could put on the October agenda the process as far as filling the vacancy. And then if there's no other pressing items, I mean, maybe we could put on the agenda the idea of not having a November meeting unless there's some other major item that needs to come forward at that time.
Understanding that if you want a November 4th, I won't be here.
And let's consider also, there. I believe we have bylaws that requires, that do not allow us to skip 2 months in a row. So I think we have to think about our December meeting, which we sometimes go dark in.
We never have.
No?
No, December we don't go dark because that's usually when we interview candidates for the November board. So.
Fine.
So we can come back and have something at the next meeting.
Just Jen's.
Yeah. Don't need to know.
We
don't
want to
talk. We have to visit.
Okay. And then are we going to adjourn?
On we're about ready.
Of books, I would like to just mention that our colleagues at Friend is having a publication talk on the 18th.
That's got to happen. That's got to happen. It's true, yeah, at Bookshop Santa Cruz next Wednesday, which is why I cannot attend the quilt. That's not nice.
Zach's written a book called On Message, and he's doing his book release book talk at Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Next Wednesday.
I'm going to read the Democratic Exit.
Everybody's got 20 other commissions to be on, but that one I was very
nice. Congratulations.
And as a future, I'm sorry,
I'm done. I just wanted
to.
That's great
news. Good luck. Yeah. That's great news. Yeah.
Free copies for all board members.
For a future agenda item, I'd like to have something agendized regarding our discard program and removal from collections and what our process is and how we can avoid, not wasting valuable resources one way or another. I don't know that we do necessarily now, but it bears some discussion.
With the cost benefit of staff time weighed in.
Oh, that's yeah. And, like I said, I didn't want to get into that part because I know that would be part of the discussion, but I think it's worthy of some discussion.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Next meeting will be Monday, October 7th at the Downtown Grand Library.